You wanted the worst? You got the worst. Bad bandmates.
It's time to get down to limp business.
Yeah.
It's bad bandmates. And that's it.
What are we talking about today?
Bad bandmates, and we're talking about surprise, surprise, Limp Bizkit.
The one
again.
And only, the best Look, band ever.
This is our show, and if we want to talk about Limp Bizkit 3 weeks in a row, are we going to do that? Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a choice? No. Does it matter if you like it? Probably should.
You're right. Yeah. But we're talking about Limp Bizkit again.
Yeah.
Last week you talked about $3 bill, y'all, cash, dollar sign, and now we're talking about their next album, Significant Other.
Yeah. Probably. I'll just spoil this. Probably one of the best albums ever made.
You think so?
No. Probably not, like, objectively, but I think it's really good.
Sure. I agree. It may not be the best album made, but it is the best album that's been made, I would say.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, I think it's time for us to dive right into Limp Bizkit's Significant Other. Before we get started, I will say, as a blanket statement, and we mentioned it a little bit last time, but this was like exactly what $3 Bill Y'all was like missing from like from a production standpoint and from like a more polished sound. And I think I don't know. I think at the end of this, maybe we'll rank the three albums and we'll discuss why. But
this is
the polish that was missing from $3 Bill for sure.
Yeah, and the stylistic comfort that they fell into on this one.
Yeah, and massive mainstream appeal. Yeah. And massive hate. I mean, honestly, like Fred Durst,
hate is what gives them the appeal. I think we discussed that in the last episode. They're hated so much that they're popular.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like what we talked about, how like the people who are in the music, whether it's rock or whatever, were just like, they're not real, you know, musicians, or they're not real rockers, or blah, blah, blah. But it's like, they paved a way for some weird shit to happen in music. And so we get to Significant Other. So any blanket statements for you, Josh?
No, I'll probably save my full thoughts for the end.
Okay. So we get into it. We got an intro. Again, with the intros. I mean, that was very, it's a very popular thing, I guess, back in the day. But just kind of a distorted voice, you know, talking about you wanted the worst. Well, you got the worst. Limp Bizkit.
I believe it's the one, the only Limp Bizkit.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Which is, you know, what a weird way to start your own album. For somebody that spreads positivity all the time with how he feels about his bandmates and whatnot, this sure was a negative beginning.
Yeah. And it's obviously they were in the studio and they were just like, yeah, let's call ourselves the worst.
Yeah.
And then Fred just like went in the vocal booth and said the lines, and then they probably just put a filter on it and it was probably Fred's voice, you know?
Yeah.
But, off to a good start. Cause I mean, the beat's kind of weird. It's wacky. And, it's just, you know, it leads into, just like this.
Yeah, just a fucking banger of a song.
Absolutely.
I mean, that drum beat right in the beginning, just simple but incredibly powerful, right in your face.
I mean, that's some of the fattest beats I've ever seen. And
some of the fattest shit I've ever seen.
Let's have the fattest shit I've ever seen. Dude, if you don't understand that reference, how many times we got to tell you, go watch Woodstock 99?
Yes, do it. Do it and then listen to the albums. You'll have more of an appreciation.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to say off the bat, I said at the end of the last episode, I think I said something about like click, click, boom. I understand that that's saliva or whatever. I wasn't like making... It's just the same type of genre, and then I, whatever. I just wanted to
saliva. In case, is it saliva?
I'm pretty sure.
Whatever band it is, I just consider them all Limp Bizkit ripoffs.
Yeah,
I mean, Limp Bizkit did it right.
Yeah, it's saliva. It's that. Yeah, C is that guy. Oh man. Someone told me love would all save her. I think he did a song with Nickelback. Anyways, it doesn't matter because we're talking about Limp Bizkit. Just like this, yes, fat ass beat comes through in the beginning. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Okay, so we talked about the production of the drums last time. What do you think about the drum production on this album as a whole?
So that's one of my like total wrap up deals is I feel like on the last album on $3 bill, y'all, cash, sign. I feel like they didn't have the clarity and the like fullness as a band, I guess. But the drums had that on that album, and it's pretty close to the same on this album, but everything else has their own space now. So in this setting, I think it's excellent. And just based off track number one, I mean, I've heard this album a million times since it came out, obviously.
Certainly.
But going in, trying to go in with fresh ears, I suppose, you really see the quality difference like fucking immediately. And it starts off like just the simple groove in the beginning could have landed and fallen into place with the quality on $3 bill. But then once everything else comes in and has that separation, it fucking vibes and I like it.
Yeah, I will say, like, you mentioned kind of the clarity of it. You can hear, like, every little thing about, especially the drums. I mean, like, there's a lot of, like, ghost notes, which is, like, you're kind of, like, hitting the drum, like, at a quieter sort of in-between moment. Like, you can hear, like, every little hit of the drum, and it's in its proper place, and it's just, like, so good. And I'll say as a blanket statement, maybe I wasn't paying attention to it as much in $3 bill, but like you can even hear, and because you mentioned as well, like everybody has their own proper place and stuff like that. I hear so much more of the like DJ production in this album. Like you can.
More.
Like so much more, right? Because like he's like scratching on beats, he's like adding little like sounds and samples here and there, and yeah, a lot of the time it's like tucked in the background, but I don't think it needed to be at the forefront of anything. It just needed to be more present, and so I don't know how much of a hand he had in $3 bill, I guess, which I should have probably looked up, but
yeah, I guess I'm not sure either. One of the things that you're mentioning I wanted to say too is when I listen to mixes, I listen for the drums first, and a good mix to me is when it sounds like the cymbals are kind of over the top of everything, which is something that you might not notice until you're really listening for it, but that's what gives the sort of breathing room for everything else, and they did an excellent job for that, or with that, rather, and then it allowed them, because, I mean, the mixing is obviously different on this with the drums than $3 bill.
Definitely.
But it made all that space in the middle and everything for the guitars, and then the vocals are usually like right in front of all that, but it just gave so much more room for everything. The mixing on this album is incredible, I think.
I agree. Like you can just hear every little thing. I mean, you know, not to say it again, but I mean, it's just true. Like everything is in its right place and you can pinpoint exactly who's playing what and like what section, and like, it's just mixed very well. So, yeah. I will say, the they do this a couple times on this album, and I really like it, is the chorus of this song, which for some reason gets stuck in my head a lot. But, like, you know, he sings, like, the first portion of it, and then it's this layering of, like, his scream vocals and sung vocals, like, that meshed really well together.
Yep.
And it kind of, like, carries the melody rather than, like, on $3 Bill, where it's either one or the other, typically. And I love the way that they incorporated the, just the sung vocals with the scream vocals. I think that it actually makes it that much. It puts it a little bit over the top, you know? Yeah,
it's almost like an octave, which is, you know, just like if there's a low note, there's a higher note that's in the same key, but it's just, you know, step up. I don't know how to say it appropriately. Right. But it's almost like an octave, but it's screaming, which is, I mean, I like octaves to begin with. I love it when there's a low and then a high, but they're in the same key doing the same thing. I think that's awesome sounding. And then you turn it into a scream, and fucking also Fred Durst is doing it. There's nothing better.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, John keeps them beats fat, and the biscuits limp when the night is over. So, so
it's not, there's not a lot of, like, really, there's a lot of really weird lyrical content. I'll just say weird.
You know what I read was, I read that on $3 Bill, which is, we talked about this at the beginning of it, like, of that episode, where the lyrics are not necessarily something that could fly today. But I read something that, like, on $3 Bill, they even pointed out themselves that the lyrics were a little bit more, like, misogynistic, or, like, you know, not PC. Right. So, but they said that on this album, they wanted to go more mature. And I was like, where did they go mature? Like, you have a song.
Mature doesn't mean your fucking mixing is better.
Yeah,
like, means we can hear it more clearly.
But they talked about, like, and this was, like, some random article or whatever. So, you know, who knows how true it was. But they were talking about how they wanted the lyrical content to be, like, more mature, less, like, misogynistic, and less, like, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, I hear no difference in lyrical content from $3 Bill to Significant Other to Chocolate Starfish. I don't.
I just, would agree.
The
band is
anyways.
Still called fucking Limp Bizkit. How mature can you get?
Right.
Crazy.
So that's all I got on Just Like This. I don't know if you had anything else before I move on to...
Great opening track.
Agreed. We move on to Nookie.
Speaking of adult lyrics... more grown up, whatever the fuck he said.
Yeah, we really wanted it to be more mature and, like, less misogynistic. Just,
but you know,
I
what,
gave
though?
It all for the Nookie.
Yeah. but, you know, all that aside, this is the song that obviously was on MTV and made me fall in love with Limp Bizkit. This is The Jam. It's a great song.
Right.
I don't have a whole lot to say. I think it's a great song. I do want to know, though, who used the blender line first, Limp Bizkit or Eve Six? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I even wrote those lyrics down. Let me see.
She put my tender heart in a blender. And Eve Six has a jam from pretty close to the same time. It says it's about the same lines.
Uh-oh.
Who's first?
Durst is first.
The Durst is first.
I'm sticking with that.
Just because it rhymes.
I didn't write down that lyric, but I wrote down that, there's a not line in here. Like, you know, when there's, like, a pause and then it's like, not.
Fucked up in my head, not.
Yeah. Dude. I'm like, wow. Okay.
Dude, this song is, to me, like, this song is Limp Bizkit. Like, if anybody's like, what's Limp Bizkit about? I'm like, fucking listen to Nookie. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the band.
That's right.
This is a jam. Also, on like a more serious note, I think that the lyrical rhythm in the verses is actually really good.
Like, yeah,
it's
I agree.
A super clever little flow that he has. It's good.
Yeah. Again, Fred is not the most prolific lyricist of our time. He's not doing Maltese. He's not doing this, that, and the other thing. But I will say, yeah, the rap levels on this album were a little bit better. You know,
better,
there
yeah.
there was more to it. But yeah, I mean, it's what can you say about Nookie that hasn't already been said? I did write down what a weird song to like blow up. You know, like blow up a band. Like I.
Have you seen
How?
The video? Have you seen the music
of course.
Video? It's a,
of course.
It's a perfect 90s or late 90s music video for MTV. I mean, the video itself, it doesn't even matter what the fuck the song does. You get a bunch of dudes in an alley throwing like a little party in some back alley in like Brooklyn or whatever the fuck they are. It's going
right.
to hit.
Right. And yeah, this is the... yeah, this is the one... Where it's just him, like, you know, getting, yeah, running down alleys and stuff like that. And then eventually there's just, like, a gang of, like, females all in red New York hats,
yep.
backwards.
Yep.
And then they're just playing in an alley, and then Fred gets arrested or some shit. And everyone's like, no.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's like, what is even happening here? Like, I don't, but anyways, it weird song to blow up for me.
It doesn't surprise me. And this is all lyrical content aside, I suppose, if you can look past that. I mean, the song bangs. The video was perfect for the time. And,
yeah.
you know, it was a new, fresh thing for MTV, really.
I think they did, again, on the bridge a little bit when everything's kind of, like, building up. Couldn't tell, like, 100%, but I think they did, like, the sung vocals with the layered screams.
Yep.
And,
yeah, they did.
Yeah, nothing's gonna change. They say God will wait. You know what is funny is that there's a band called the Aquabats, and they are probably around this time, maybe a little bit later, they did a song called I Fell Asleep on My Arm. They were a ska band, right? They were a ska band. But I can tell listening to... Because I've been going on my new metal shit lately. Listening to this song in particular and then listening to... I can't remember off the top of my head a specific Korn song. But, like, they're literally just making fun of new metal in the song. And I think they even say nothing's gonna change, and like so I'm like, I found that a little bit funny when I was thinking about that. But
can I just say, hearing you say the sentence, I've been going off on a little nu metal kick or whatever you said, that brings so much joy to my heart.
I mean, you know, hey man,
I just love that we share this. We're so opposite on so many things musically, but. Like, if you didn't like Limp Bizkit, I wouldn't do this podcast with you. I'd be like, fuck you, you're not my friend anymore, I'm mad at you. That's not true,
yeah.
But I'd be pretty bummed about it. Like, I don't care if you hate Glass Animals. If you don't think that Nookie and Break Stuff are two amazing songs.
Which is a good segue into going into the next track, Break Stuff.
Yes.
Which, I mean, look, this track...
Dude,
absolutely rips.
It's so good. This is such a good song. I don't know a single person, and that includes my mom, that doesn't think this song is awesome.
Dude, I'm thinking about like all okay, so there's something to be said about like how simplistic Limp Bizkit kept it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the riff is just like and that's like literally it, the entire song. And like the chorus is almost the reverse of that. It's like
the bridge is just din-din-din-din-din-din. It's the same
yeah.
chords. You know what I thought was cool though? See, but they do that, but they add in cool little things, like in the chorus when he says Let Shit Slip or You'll Be Leaving With a Fat Lip. The drums do this like kind of like stutter ketchup sort of beat. And I don't mean ketchup like the condiment. I mean like they're catching up to the click essentially. But it kind of like not falls off time, but it seemingly falls off of the beat of the song. Like that kind of shit is what you can do in a simplistic song like this to make it incredibly ear catching. That along with this song really let Fred kind of breathe openly and just do all kinds of crazy shit.
I'd agree. I just want to point out that a couple of favorite bits in this track, which is when they kind of go into the bridge where everything is like building and it's just like, you know, Fred talks about, so just keep your distance. Right now I'm dangerous.
in that Fred accent, the fraccent that he puts up.
The fraccent. Yeah, dude, I love the fraccent. Oh, don't get me started on it. But and then the line about I pack a chainsaw, I'll skin your ass raw. was this a hard bar in 1999? Like
must have been.
It must have been the hardest of bars. But like, it's kind of a little goofy. Like, I pack a chainsaw and I'm gonna just like shave your butt.
I mean, even the big bridge when it pauses and he yells and it's like this big intense part and then the bridge, you know, it comes back in just hard as fuck. All he says is, "I just might break your fucking face tonight." Like, that's not.
Right.
It's not that. Maybe it, you know what it is a problem right now, I'm just realizing, is we are so beaten down by the shitty things that people say all the time that somebody saying they're going to skin your ass with a chainsaw and break your face is like, okay, you can't do any better than that. We're all fucked up.
That's exactly right. I mean, what can you say about this song? It's just so good. The simplistic riffs, the lyrics are just goofy as hell, but still go hard to this day. Maybe, I don't know.
I think the song fucking rips.
It's a great song.
It's a great track, and you know, this couldn't be a stronger start to an album.
I agree. That's one of my notes. I got that at the end. It's a nice little bow on top. Unless you have anything to say, we move on to Rearranged.
Rearranged it is.
The bass line? Okay. Oh. Hey. Mm-mm. Just keep
just
it
get
coming,
me pregnant
dude.
Right now. Just impregnate me with that bass. That's if gross.
If nothing else, just listen to that sick bass line. And I think that there needed to be a little bit of a dip in the energy.
Yes, definitely.
But I don't, but like, I know the last album I talked about, I don't know about the energy levels and some of the slower songs and stuff like that, or some of the more mellow songs. This one, I actually think is it's not like a top tier Limp Bizkit song for me, but I think it's a good slower jam.
It's necessary. And this goes back to, at least in my opinion, it goes back to the quality of the recordings on this and the mixing, because I think that $3 bill would catch you strange having a slower, pretty track like this, the same way maybe like the Ramones would, because it sounds so shitty. But I mean that in an endearing way, but like the recordings aren't great. So then you throw in something slow and pretty, it's not going to make fucking sense because you're used to a mess. This song is so clean that even when they're doing their huge builds, like Break Stuff, it doesn't get any bigger than that in a song, really. They can switch to this because this new quality that they have gives them the freedom to have those ups and downs and those weird hills and dips within the album. And I think the song is incredibly boring, but also it's very necessary and really beautiful. It's just too long for me. That's my problem with it.
Yeah, I will say, I think that's what actually keeps it from being like a top tier Limp Bizkit song for me, is like the bass line matched with the drum groove, and then Wes Borland doing his little plunky guitar bits, and then some of the, even like the scratch, the DJ scratching and stuff on it, like it's kind of cool. It keeps it like interesting. If this was like a minute shorter, I think easily a top tier Limp Bizkit song. And that's actually something to mention about Break Stuff. I didn't realize how short the song kind of is.
Yeah. It's,
you know, short. For a Limp Bizkit song, it's kind of short. And so
it is. And that may lie in the complexity, because it is the same shit. So how long can you really carry it?
Yeah, exactly. But everything matched together. I think that the song gives like a little bit more of a like atmosphere than I'm used to with Limp Bizkit. Like usually they're playing brash chords and you know, rapping or screaming or whatever. But the bass line with Wes Borland and the drums, there's just this nice meshed atmosphere going on, and
yeah,
I really dig that.
Yeah. So, and I love, there's a few songs on this is one of them, or actually I think most songs might have it, but I love the little bits that they put at the end that just have nothing to do with either of the songs, that they're smashed in between, but I love right. that little shit, because it shows like a little bit of like fun maybe that they were having in the studio, like, oh well, this sounds really cool, we should pop it into the album anyway, even though it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I
like that kind of shit.
Right. So, Rearranged. We move on to I'm Broke.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, you got it.
Mine's short. I really like the verses on this track. I think the song, like the actual writing on this song is good. I think the lyrical mm-hmm. content is pretty decent, considering, yeah. I mean, it's just about people taking advantage of him, taking his money, I assume. And in the end, he's right. saying, I'm broke. I love the verses. I think that the rhythm of it is really good, but I fucking skipped the song because I think the choruses are so bad on it.
Me, I'm
it's bad. So dumb. Yeah. It sounds like a Smash Mouth chorus to me. And I don't mind Smash Mouth when it's Smash Mouth. But that's really all I have on this song.
Yeah, I mean, the harsh, like, brash chords, like I was discussing just not even a minute ago, I mean, they're present in this song. It's just, like, it's just, yeah. but it keeps it, it just brings up the intensity from Rearranged, and, I will say that at this point, I kind of noticed how similar a lot of the drum beats are.
Yes.
I don't know if that was something that you saw, but like you hear like it's always like completely closed hi-hat mm-hmm. with just like like on the snare, like and
yeah, it feels the only time that he really has to breathe and play anything different is bridges. The verses and the choruses are always very, very similar. But right. that maybe that goes back to the Bizkit formula. You know, their songs on this album have a formula.
I think it does, because I think that because they're fusing this like rock and rap and stuff like that, I think they're trying to keep the drum beat like almost in that same, like, you know, the drum beat is very steady and very static a lot of the time. Doesn't mean it's not doing stuff cool, but like in hip hop, it's just like you have a drum beat and you're just doing that drum beat, yeah. you know? But I just really noticed it at this point, you know, going back to it and just writing down notes. I'm like, oh yeah, they're kind of using a lot of the same or similar like drum beats for mm-hmm. verse and chorus, but that's okay. And then at about, I think it's at about 140. Let me get to it. yeah. So it's like, I can't really tell. I think it's Wes Borland just kind of playing low tone on the guitar.
Yeah.
And it's like broken down. And then Fred just goes, give me back my money. And I just love
give
that.
Give me back
bit.
My money, bum.
And then, like, all of a sudden it just kicks into this like heavy like bridge breakdown sort of thing.
Yeah, dude, and one of the best bridges on the album, I think, the vocal delay, like the slapback delays. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Right. And what a like what a hard breakdown to like talk about, like you said you'd pay me back or whatever, and like stuff like that, like all about just giving him his money. And yeah. I don't know if I've heard a breakdown about just getting give me back my money, you know. So
yeah, it's a good little unique. Bridge. Yeah. It's a good little bridge, and I think that phonetically he ends a lot of his phrases with a k, if that makes sense. So it's like with the compression on it, it hits that slap delay perfect to where it just is audibly incredibly pleasing. Does that make sense? Okay. Like at all?
I mean, to you it does.
Yeah.
That's but fine. That's okay.
I don't really care what you guys think.
So but anyways, I'm broke. So we move on to Nobody Like You.
Yeah, I wrote down that it was called Nobody Likes You because I'm dumb.
You know what? I think I have that it that way in my iPod.
Well, dude,
when you have a 20-year-old iPod, yeah, you know, I just,
when you get a name on yourself still.
Yeah, what a, exactly.
What a heavy as fuck intro. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
definitely. And
the only thing I don't like on, well, no, that's not true. One of the things I don't like on this song is this is a heavy, heavy intro. And then it has yeah. Fred with a lot of reverb just going. Ah,
yeah. Yeah.
Why?
I know. I wish it would just continue with like going hard. You know,
yeah. You don't need vocals there. It was good. It had plenty to fill the gaps.
I will point out how similar. If you just were to take out the drums on Counterfeit, and you were just to put these guitar riffs side by side,
I didn't notice. Yeah, they're very close.
It's kind of similar.
Oh, that's fun. I didn't notice that.
But anyways, I you know what is interesting about this track is, especially in this time period, I don't know if a lot of people were doing like features like this. Because this is the Korn vocalist, right?
Oh, my that's God. Okay. So I know things about music, I just realized, because my notes said, this song is a little Korn, isn't it? Who's that other vocalist? Is this actually Korn? Yeah. I had no idea. Nice. Because Amazon yeah. Music doesn't list features, apparently.
Not I don't think. And I looked everywhere and it didn't like. I don't know what it was, but it just like I couldn't find that this was for sure a feature. But then I'm like, I know you can't really mistake the vocalist for Korn, even though he's fairly similar to like.
Honest to God, I don't think I've ever really listened to a Korn song.
Okay, well, it's not, they're, I'm not gonna, just, you know, they are what they were. This is definitely Korn's vocalist, and I think that's very unique for the time. I don't, again, I'm not, like, of course I don't know everything that was coming up around that this same time period, but, like, I feel like Fred was taking Limp Bizkit was taking a very much a page from like hip hop and like that sort of book where it's like, you know, have features on it. But even hip hop during that time, there was features, but like it wasn't like so prevalent, I guess.
No,
but.
And something I like that they did on this with the features is because you'll get like in this era, you'll get like an Eminem album that has Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and a bunch of people.
Right.
And vice versa. And then same with like the East Coast side of hip hop. You'll get that kind of shit. Bands didn't really do features, but something that I like that Limp Bizkit did is they had some features on this album, but they cater the songs to fit the guest as opposed to the guest trying to fit in the band's like,
yeah.
realm, if that makes sense. So like this song was, I mean, obviously I didn't know it was Korn. I knew somebody was on this. I didn't know yeah. who it was, But they obviously catered this song to fit more in that style, whereas later on, which we'll talk about, Method Man's on this album, and like that song is totally catered to fit Method Man's style. And I think that's an interesting way to have, or a smart way to have features on, because it makes them the focal point. Like, this is your record, so this is your moment still. But it's good to push somebody out in front and kind of make that the forefront, at least for a little bit on it. So I think it was cool the way that they did that, even though this is not one of my favorite songs on the album.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's a bit at about the 2:30 mark where John's just going crazy on the drums. I just had to shout that little bit out because he's just doing a little cool couple of fill bits.
Yeah,
and some,
yeah, he's got some pretty sexy little fills in there.
Yeah. They're also at the same point. I think they're, what are they saying? They're saying, I have to figure this out. Hold on.
I got no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I got no reason or whatever. It was at this point that my wife was in the room and she's like, what are they saying? And I was like, let me find out. And she's like, are they saying Liam Neeson?
I can hear it, Liam Neeson.
right.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So now you have that stuck in your head.
I will forever hear that.
What was the pickles and cheese with the glass animals? Pickles and cheese.
Yeah.
So I love little misheard lyrics, but yeah, this is an interesting, I wish they would have kept the energy up like we said at the beginning of the track. Kind of a cool thing though to have, you know, Jonathan Davis, I think is the singer for Korn, featured on the track. Just an interesting thing for the time period, I think. Yeah. So Don't Go Off Wandering is the next track.
Dude, this song is littered with the Fred Durst swagger in his vocals. Yeah. And I love, like, the Fred Durst accent, the fraccent that we talk about. Every line is fraccented. I love it.
Definitely. This song to me is kind of like the chorus for I'm Broke, where I get like a little bit like, like, you know, the, like, it just kind of, I don't know.
I think this is a time period kind of song. In 99, when this came out, this was a heavy hitting chorus, I'm sure.
Yes,
now, this, not so much.
I can picture, I mean, even some of the local bands back then, like, you can absolutely picture them ripping off this chorus.
Yes,
you know?
This, like, song could have been in a Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire as the lead, easily.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But instead you got Nickelback and Saliva.
Great songs. Know.
And they say that hero in serious
not going way.
I think we hit the harmony there. We'll find
sure
out in post.
we'll cut anyways, that post.
Yeah. Just kind of the echoey guitar and the fat ass drum beat, you know, with a PH fat, you know. I just wrote that this was such an of this era song, which is kind of what we were talking about. There is some like cool synth, like very tiny bit, but of like synth work and even some string samples, like,
yeah,
in the bridge,
dude,
area.
Yeah, the bridge is the only part in the song that I think holds up to today's era. The bridge is, it's creepy. It's a good bridge. It's creepy and it's big and it's open and it builds perfectly. The bridge is beautiful.
Right. And this is the point where I was like, again, this is that next step that would have pushed $3 Bill if it was on something like that, like even more over the edge than it was. But obviously they just needed to make that. And this is this. And I think that the production fits this album more, because it would have just stood out if it was on $3 bail. But
yeah,
they were experimenting a little bit with, you know, some of that, some more electronics sounds and stuff like that, which is cool. And
I think it definitely worked. It may not seem like it worked now because we're so different in today's world, but in 99, this fucking worked.
Yeah.
Speaking of 99.
Oh,
hey!
Segue. 1999 yeah. is the next.
Nine, the number, teen, the word, 90, the number, nine, spelt out for the number.
Hell yeah. God, this song rips, but not really, but kind of. It's so...
yeah, again, it's described it.
it's one of those things where, like, God, they build up this intensity in the beginning, and then they go to the verse.
Cut the fuck out of it. It is and... Scott. Like, take it all away.
And it's just bling, 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 bling.
Yeah.
Bling,
it's bling, like they put a pork chop in my mouth and they were like, no, here's a piece of lettuce instead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was a metaphor.
Yeah, well, no one knows that. But I do. So it's also so weird because the way the track starts, it's I can't really describe it because, again, you know, I'm not like a guitar player or whatever, but it's just Wes playing, like, I think just an open string and just like with no filters, with no filters, no, nothing on it, just like raw guitar,
just
raw dogging it with his Limp Bizkit. And then it kicks in with just this heavy shit. And then, yeah, they lose the energy on the verse, and again, I think they stuck to their formula, and obviously it worked for them, and obviously this song still rips.
I think that this song is built for a live setting, is my opinion. Yeah. Like, could you imagine being in, oh, I would never do this, but could you imagine seeing a mosh pit for a show like this, or being in it if you're into that bullshit, and then it just fucking it just cuts and everybody's just quiet and captivated, but then they come back in and they just hit you in the head with the hammer when the chorus comes in. Like, that's intense.
Right. And this is featured on Woodstock 99, so
oh, yeah.
I mean, because obviously it was 1999. But I mean, the chorus just goes so hard, and then on the bridge, there's that like tom breakdown that kind of like goes real nice. I love that, and then they bring the beat back and go into the chugs just so hard, and so I the verse is so weird though, and. And there's one more song on the album that does the same exact thing, and we'll get to it. But like, I'm just like, the verses just get a little too weird for me with the music, the musicality of it. So, but beyond that, I mean, I think this is a great track. I do. It is what it is. So.
It's good enough, and it ends up with someone singing, I think it's acoustically, right?
Check. Let's see.
Yeah, it's just like they stuck a microphone next to a radio and we're listening to some like old country song, and the lyrics are, my billy goat was feeling fine, he ate my shirt, remember that? Right off the line. Look at me, I'm singing to you. And like, that's cool. It's like Dolly Parton or some shit.
Sure.
That's cute. Weird.
And then we go into the only like really hip hop track on the album.
Let me just tell you, this is far and away my favorite Limp Bizkit song.
I love it. Just like the least Limp Bizkit song ever.
The least Limp Bizkit song of all of the Limp Bizkit songs.
It's produced by DJ Premier, and it's like only a little bit of Fred Durst and Method Man.
It is mostly Method Man, but I think that Fred Durst actually in the realm of rap fucking is really good on this song.
He holds his own a little bit in this track.
Oh, I love it. I think it's just because the hook is shut the fuck up. And I like that.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, to go back to it, I just wrote, how did he get DJ Premier on their album? How did he get Method Man on the album? And Money. That's all I wrote for this track.
Money. Well, really, though, Limp Bizkit's on the rise and they're blowing up all over MTV. I'm sure people were like, yeah, I'll get the fuck on that.
DJ Premier is maybe one of the best like hip hop producers to like ever do it. He was with the producer for Gangstar.
But
maybe one of the best rap duos in history was DJ Premier and Guru. And this beat is no exception to DJ Premier's greatness. I mean, it's a fantastic beat.
And how many, again, this is era friendly, but how many of DJ Premier's songs were on, you know, TRL top 10?
Yeah, you know what? I guess I'm not sure at this point. A little
exposure from a band that's blowing up to be a worldwide sensation on one of the, well, the biggest music station at the time, probably not a bad move. Same thing with Method Man, like not a bad play.
I'm curious now to see how many tracks that Premier was going for around this time, because I mean he has had his hand in like so many things, and now I'm curious to research into that a little bit. I very much am. I don't, you know, like usually like the DJs who do the tracks and stuff like that, they get to like shout out their own names, but then you just get Fred Durst going DJ, meh. And like, I'm like, come on, guy. Like, this is like one of the most prolific hip hop producers of all time, and you're gonna go DJ, meh.
Fucking like, Limp Bizkit, dude. I mean, yeah. What do you say?
I do like this track though. It's just so like, it's not out of place. It just seems like such a strange departure, like in the album. You know.
I agree. Yeah.
It is a great track though. Shut the fuck up is a great hook. I mean, it's just a great hook.
I think so. Method Man has such a pleasing voice.
Oh, absolutely.
Significantly great. Significantly other.
Yeah.
Stupid. And then you got anything else on that one?
No.
So move on to Trust? Question mark.
Right.
Trust? So they go from that hip hop as fuck to just the heaviest of the metal.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's such a weird transition. And I just had the line about Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger will step in your dream and leave you screaming like a demon or whatever he says. That line just sticks out to me a lot. Just a weird opening too. It's almost like this acoustic-y jazz chords, and then just goes into like the hardest beat on the album.
Yeah, just screaming guitars for 98% of the song, and it's like back feet as fuck too.
Yeah, yeah, oof. Yeah, yeah.
But it's a cool song. I don't understand. I just don't understand the. You know, it's so polar opposite of what came before. I would have preferred if it didn't dive right into some shit like this. But
right.
I also am a failure, and Limp Bizkit is the best band ever, probably. So what the fuck do I know?
I got a little bitty question, dude. I this has the most fraxent, I think, on the whole album, I think.
Yeah.
But
it's like as he goes, he's like, well, I'll just add some more of that frack scent into here.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, lyrically, heavy song on the album.
Lyrically, terribly written song.
Yeah, I didn't look too much on the lyrics on this one.
He pretty much just yells, what is the, I'm too fucking good and fucking proud. I'm going to show you how bad it hurts to be a clown. That's all you need to know. It doesn't get any better than that.
Right. Well,
and that's good track. Trust.
The next song is a total skip for me.
Oh, I hate this song.
Okay. No Sex.
Terrible song.
Yeah, just the should have left my pants on this time. Like, just stop.
Yeah, way just, to write songs like a fucking grown up.
Yeah, remember at the beginning of this episode where I referenced the fact they were trying to talk about being, you know what? I think that they thought this was like more mature because it's like, I don't know. I can't explain it. But they did not do a more mature job.
He wrote lyrics that say, you let me dive right, you let me dive right in. And the song's called No Sex, so I wonder what that's about. It's just not, it's not good.
No, not at all. But it's
not a good song.
Yeah. And look, it's, you know, he was feeling some type of way. Obviously, it was about some female that he probably, isn't this around the time that he like got divorced or something? Because he was like married early.
I know little to know about Fred Durst's life.
I don't know. I watched a documentary recently, and because I have nothing better to do with my life than watch Limp Bizkit documentaries. But I can't remember if.
Hold on. Let me fix that sentence. There's nothing better to do in life than watch Limp Bizkit documentaries.
You're right. You're so right. But it's, yeah, I don't know. He was going through some, you know, probably some woman issues or problems or whatever, you know.
Sure.
But the song sucks, so sorry.
Lyrical content aside, I think the song sucks anyway.
Yeah. Musically, it doesn't do anything bland for me.
It's a little bland. Okay.
Yeah. But then we get to the song that I was referencing earlier, which is Show Me What You Got.
Yeah. Dude, I fucking hate this song. Congratulations, you know a bunch of cities. It's so fucking dumb. We talked about this in the live episode, or in the Woodstock 99 episode. It's just it's a dumb fucking song. It's dumb. Like, it's dumb.
Hey, ladies.
Yeah, dude. It's a stupid song. Let me find the lyrics quick so I can read to you why this is a stupid song. These are inappropriate, just FYI. Got lost in Boston looking for the tea party. Met a child molester in Worcester. I need a Kleenex every time I'm leaving Phoenix. Fucking don't write this song. I get silly when I play in Philly. Fuck off.
Cincinnati, the girls call me daddy. I mean, that's another classic line.
It's a dumb song.
But I think that, now let me, is this, okay, so is this the song? It's literally either this or 1999. Where they break it down with the fattest shit I've ever seen in Woodstock 99. I think it's 1999, but I can't remember.
I thought it was this song.
It might be this song. I just, the only thing that's like redeemable about this song is like, I don't know, I guess maybe the chorus. It's just like, but even that is just like hard fucking
guitar. Hey, lady. I hate this fucking song.
It's like anything with Limp Bizkit. It's a love-hate relationship, and
Look, as far as Limp Bizkit songs go, this is, in my opinion, a bottom tier. Will I listen to it still? Yeah. But will I get annoyed every time I hear him say, and I spit on a boy named Tina in Pasadena? Yeah. It's just not... Be like a little bit better than that. It's not well written at all. No. The music is great, though. I think musically the song's really cool, actually. It has some really cool, like, dissonant guitar notes in the verses. I think it had a lot of potential, and then Fred Durst wrote the lyrics. That's where it all went south.
Right. So, I mean, it's a okay song. Not great. Not terrible. But then we move on to A Lesson Learned, which is also kind of a skip for me, I would say. Yeah. Just kind of this ambient sort of like hip hop beat in the background where Fred is doing his like whispery ass vocals, you know?
Yeah. And there's, and when he's not doing, it's just, it's over processed, I think, is my deal with this song. It's there comes a point where quality can be shit on from over processing. I do that with songs that I make in life. I overprocess vocals to hide the fact that I'm bad at everything. And I feel like they kind of stumbled into that on this. I think it was like meant to be like an artsy, you know, like heartfelt song. Yeah. And you get that out of it. It's just, I've, at least at this time, maybe in 99 it was different, but in this time, like, I've heard shit like this. It's just a little boring and unnecessary.
Right. And then we get the outro bits, which, you know, is fine. They wrap it up with the same beat as they had in the intro. Mm-hmm. And but they say, you wanted the best, and you got the best, Limp Bizkit. So.
And that's it.
Right? Yeah. There's like these other like little skits, I guess.
Yeah, you can say. I didn't do anything with the skits.
No, you don't need to.
Skip the skits.
Overall, I would say this album, Significant Other, obviously it's the album that made them blew up after, you know, Faith kind of exploded them. And then this really, I would say, has maybe their four or five, like, strongest tracks that they've ever made. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and it's all right. It's front loaded. Mm-hmm. Like, it's right in the beginning of the album. And then, yeah, I don't know. It's, but then you got the weirdness with the corn feature, and also the Method Man DJ Premier. This album is very interesting, and it's, and as much as some of the tracks we weren't necessarily fond of, I think that the tracks that do go hard really make up for the tracks that are kind of mediocre. You know, that's my thought on it. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that my sum up of this album is, I think that Significant Other, as you stated, has some of the strongest material that they've ever written. But I also think that it has some of the weakest. I think that this is an example of an album that was written by a band that maybe achieved popularity faster than their sound could keep up with. So they tried to do things on this album that they just weren't quite there yet. And that may be a downfall from $3 Bill, which is where they obviously got their start and they started to gain popularity from. Maybe that wasn't grown up enough, and maybe they kind of dove in too soon. To me, this album always feels a little bit incomplete. Like, they had the right idea, they had a lot of really good ideas, and it sort of just fell short at some points. However, I'm not sure, we'll find out next week, if I think that there is any fully complete Limp Bizkit albums. But I will say that this is, and I feel like when we talk about this, people think that this is in some way a joke, but I truly believe that this is a good album. They have a lot of really awesome songs on this, and it sounds so dumb to say, but it doesn't to me, but I'm sure some people think that, but I think that there are some fucking banging songs on this. I just think that as in its entirety, I don't think the album was quite up to what they wanted it to be.
Yes, I would agree with that. And look, to even reiterate the point that we're not fucking joking about this shit.
No, I fucking love Limp Bizkit.
We both were like, I need to find Limp Bizkit vinyl. Like, I need that in my life. And We searched. And
if I had $250 that I didn't want to spend on a tattoo, I would be buying the Limp Bizkit vinyl. And someday I will. I will own those. That's like a must have. Did I listen to this album and then watch Woodstock 99 for the fucking, I don't even know how many times? Yeah.
You better believe it. I think that the context of live setting with some of these tracks, as you mentioned earlier, give it that extra push that's missing on the album. Mm-hmm. Especially going into that's some of the fattest shit I've ever seen. And just some of the other stuff that they could play with, like in a live setting versus studio.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that these guys are musicians that know their instruments and know each other well enough in a band setting that could just mess around and produce some of the fattest shit they've ever seen in a live setting.
Yeah, and they not only do they know themselves and their instruments, but they more so know their fans. There are people and artists that write music for radio release, such as, you know, like the Taylor Swifts, Beyoncés, those kinds of people, and it'll translate to a live setting. And then there's artists like Limp Bizkit, or another one that I always think of is Prof, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
A lot of his songs are catered to be in a live setting. Like, you can listen to it on the album and it's fine, but in a live setting, like, fuck. Same with, you haven't seen them yet, Nate, but Glass Animals is one of those bands. Like, their songs are set up to be more successful live. And that's what I think that Limp Bizkit does, because they're hard shit.
Yeah.
I've never seen them, but I would I've watched enough live shows of theirs where I feel like I've seen them a million times. But they're like, their heavy shit is going to blow your fucking mind away. And then their weird stuff that might be boring on the album is going to be enough of a come down to make the show still interesting. So as an album, not 10 out of 10. But it's Limp Bizkit, so it's 10 out of 10. I don't know.
Of course. Amen. Well, I think I'm going to go watch Woodstock 99.
Aren't we all?
Limp Bizkit. But that's it. Significant Other. It's one of those albums where I think that it's a product of its time, but there are some timeless jams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's about all I got to say on the matter.
So next week, kiddos, I have an ice cube in my mouth. Yeah. We'll be listening to Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water by none other than Limp Bizkit.
Yep. That's right. 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah. And if you're not fucking well behaved, we're going to do a recap of Woodstock 99.
Just do it again, dude.
The same.
Or we'll keep going into like their later albums.
You
we'll
don't
just,
want
like,
that.
Keep
I don't know Noah. If I've ever done that. I think I stopped at Chocolate Starfish.
What's that green album? Like with the guy yelling?
Let me look.
I feel like I remember that one. It's like
Results May Vary. Yeah, I didn't.
That's right. That. Results May Vary.
I went $3 Bill, Significant Other, Chocolate Starfish, Greatest Hits.
I mean, that's really all you need. So, next week, Chocolate Starfish, Hot Dog Flavor Water. In the meantime, just go watch Woodstock 99, Limp Bizkit, see the day that the music died. And in the meantime, beyond that, listen to our episode on Limp Bizkit, Woodstock 99. And also, in the meantime, beyond that, listen to our last episode, which is all about $3 Bill, y'all, $, and like on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and share with your friends and family so that we can get sponsored by Shave My Ball. What's that sponsor?
It was Manscaped, and they just shot us down.
Hey, they reached out to us, though, so we had to get our hopes up. Shave My Ball. All right. Limp Bizkit style.
Hold on, what about this? What about this? Thank you to our sponsors. Never mind, I don't have a good joke. I was going to say like Allie and Casey or something, but they don't fucking listen to this.
Perfect. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.